Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
There's been a debate brewing in this country for a long time, and the most recent happenstance relative to Jimmy Kimmel's show has just caused this debate to hit an all-time high relative to content moderation, content limitation, and the like. There are examples that are replete through probably 4, 5, 6, 7 year history here for sure. Leading into the pandemic and really getting heightened through the pandemic. What is the obligations? What are the duties of government? And what actually does the First Amendment mean? Here to talk to us about it, Stefan Padfield, Executive Director of the Free Enterprise Project. Stefan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Thank you, sir. You know, the Biden administration has been accused by almost every social media outlet, X, Twitter, YouTube, and others, to say that they were in constant communication with them during the pandemic, trying to engaging in content moderation, content elimination. They didn't even want satire to be out there about the pandemic, and they keep falling back on that they have a duty to protect the public from misinformation. Does that duty exist?
I mean, I think just starting with the word misinformation is a red flag, right? I mean, we should start with, is it true or is it false? Yes, perhaps there is a duty to protect the public in some form against false information. But if you can't even call it false information, if you have to call it quote-unquote misinformation, that seems to me to be already admitting that you're starting to go down the road to trying to eliminate other types of content, and specifically content that you are against on an ideological basis. So I think the argument that there is some government duty to protect the public against misinformation, I mean, we can make those arguments, but to me, it's already just a giant red flag that we're talking about misinformation rather than false information.
And in a lot of cases, the people that they were trying to eliminate their content, these weren't just, you know, non-accredited individuals, right? These were well-established scientists making observations in some cases.
Yeah, it's really a powerful example of how, you know, for example, I'll use the analogy to the climate science debate, right? Basically, first, we just get rid of all the opposing voices, right? All those researchers and individuals who aren't marching lockstep with the ideological consistent platform. And then once we've gotten rid of them, we say all the scientists agree, right? So it's this phenomena where you have very respected commentators who are coming from a different perspective than what the, you know, approved messaging is by the Biden administration. And they just shut them down regardless of how much factual basis they have or how much credibility or how many followers. It was extremely concerning at the time. It continues to be extremely concerning. And I know you mentioned the Jimmy Kimmel scenario, and I think there are just so many ways in which those two situations can be distinguished. And certainly there are things to talk about in terms of the use of government power in any form to address something like Jimmy Kimmel. But to me, the backdoor censorship leadership that the Biden administration employed versus the very overt and transparent statements made by the Trump administration, very different. And you can see that just in the market response, right? Kimmel was back on air in a matter of days, whereas the Biden, we're only now getting the accounts being reinstated by YouTube. So it's a very different risk that we're talking about.
Well, the interesting thing, too, is that the Biden administration is using as a defense that this was a novel virus. Well, it would seem to me if that's in fact the case, then what that also means is that you don't have well-settled science. So it makes that slope, in my view, even slipperier. Your thoughts?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is definitely some irony in saying, well, it's a novel virus. We don't really know everything about it, but we definitely know you can't say X, Y, Z, right? We definitely know that what we've settled on amidst all this confusion and novelty is the only thing that can be discussed. So, yeah, I think there's an admission right baked into that attempt to justify their actions that shows that it was a lot of fear, right? And if we're going to have some sympathy for the actions of the Biden administration, certainly there was a lot of fear. And people don't act well at any level when they're rooted in fear. But what we hope is that the principles that we are founded upon, which have been instilled for very good reasons, like free speech and allowing that to inform our decision making, you know, up and down our society, that would have been the go-to rather than having the fear lean us right into this backdoor jawboning censorship. So I think the rationales that we're getting in defense of what went on really only go a very short distance before they fall apart.
Stefan, hindsight's 2020, but it is a valuable lesson because in the end, what we recognize and realize is that some of what was being articulated by the Biden administration, and this is not a criticism, it turned out to be wrong. And one has to wonder whether or not we would have arrived at that place sooner had we let the discourse continue.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, something else that's worth mentioning, I think, is that in a time of crisis, in a time of fear, there is an opportunity for really arrogant people to take center stage, right? And so certainly we have heard a lot about Fauci and his beliefs that he is science, right? And this is one of the problems is that people are scrambling for answers. They're unsure, and somebody steps in the picture and has this air of confidence and the CV to back it up, and all of a sudden we just hand over all decision-making authority, right? It's sort of that line that I will occasionally use about myself, which is, frequently wrong, but rarely in doubt, right? And so we let this person basically become the focal point for the decision making. And because he had this arrogant confidence and couldn't really brook any dissent, that really played into the administration's attempt to shut down any contrary speech. And we really should be going in the other direction, as you say, which is recognizing our shortcomings and having some humility and opening up to different perspectives.
Let us move to Jimmy Kimmel. You say that there are ways that this should be significant, is distinct from the other. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so I think, first of all, the one I mentioned, just in terms of the way in which the Biden administration was using back channels, whereas the Trump administration with the FCC was very upfront about what it was saying, and it was very public, and that gave the market the opportunity to respond. And so the transparency led to that quote-unquote censorship being very limited, right, to the extent it was impact at all, versus the backdoor channels that we're only finding out the full extent of years later. So much more problematic there. There's also a difference between the tech companies, which are much more private, if not just, let's just say, flat out private, versus networks like ABC that are using the FCC airways, the public airways, and basically contractually agree to have some element of public service, public good in what they do. So they become much more subject to regulation because of that agreement and their desire to use the public airways, right? So I think those are some very critical critical points. And if we think about what should we be more concerned about, you know, the fact that the FCC very overtly makes a statement that is very defensible in terms of being consistent with its mission and then gets arguably corrected by the market very quickly versus the back channeling with our, you know, private enterprises that leads to a censorship that we don't even hear about until years later, and accounts have been basically blacked out since then. I just think the two, and I'm not trying to diminish the extent we should ask questions about the Kimmel situation and be concerned about the implications, but to compare the two is to say, I think in the end, if you do it honestly, you say what went on with the Biden administration was much, much worse.
Yeah, I'm one that doesn't really particularly care for regulatory authorities to say things not in a formal fashion of like a meeting of the FCC or otherwise, and to throw stuff out, whether it be, you know, on an interview or otherwise. But going back to what you said early on in the interview, is what we're talking about, or is the subject matter about, truth? And it was obvious that the statement made by Jimmy Kimmel was anything but the truth, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, if you want to start using the word misinformation again, right? So that was just false. But the concerns that we often hear to justify misinformation in terms of, oh, there's going to be all this, you know, these bad dominoes are going to fall and people are going to behave badly and they're going to take, you know, actions that are going to be harmful to our society. I think all of that certainly does apply with Jimmy Kimmel, given his, you know, broad audience and the statements that he was making about the nature and motives of that that awful assassination, that tragic assassination. So I think absolutely, if you just apply the standard of truth under the umbrella of, you know, having access to these public airways, at least to some extent, in order to provide some sort of public service, I think the Kimmel situation and what he said just fails that standard.
Yeah. You know, Pete, I've had a lot of folks, I've talked about this many times, and I know you've written about it as well, and the left's reaction is they always focus on what the public benefit is, what they're trying to achieve, like, you know, in the case of the pandemic, of possible misinformation. They talk about some crazy comments that have been made by not only the president but others relative to swallowing bleach or this, that, or otherwise. What happens when we start putting an asterisk next to the First Amendment? You know, we have some exceptions as to regulated time, place, manner restrictions. Those have been litigated throughout history. But when we start talking about content moderation or the discontinuance of content, we're in a whole different purview, right?
Absolutely. And I think a place where you see this is the terminology creep, right? So as you say, we have limitations that are available for government to argue when it can regulate speech, right? And those are well litigated and well-versed. But now you start getting this creep, and primarily from the left, where it's misinformation, disinformation, hate speech, offensive speech, right? I mean, so you just go on, and that is putting that asterisk by the First Amendment that is making significant inroads into our free speech. And we're seeing this very much with the EU and Europe generally, right? The way that their regulations are very upfront about the fact that they're going to try to very aggressively police speech that falls under some of these vague definitions that are completely open to misuse and abuse, right? In under the guise of things like protecting against offense and hate speech and all these sorts of things. So I think that that we need to be very careful. We have our principles. They have stood the test of time. They are you know, deeply embedded in our culture. And so any inroads that are being suggested to limit the scope of the First Amendment, we need to take our time and really think seriously about and really ultimately be ready to defend that First Amendment and our free speech to its full breadth.
You know, had we not had this happenstance relative to the pandemic, I would suspect that we would be experiencing similar things as it relates to the transgender issues that are presented in society today. I think you would see a lot of that going on right now. Your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely. And I think that's one of the places where you start to see the unrealistic nature of a lot of leftist agendas and the way that they ultimately bump up against reality. And so it starts with something that people at least superficially think they can get behind, you know, broad concepts like inclusivity, live and let live, right? Consenting adults. But next thing you know, you're being told that you have to speak falsity, right? Like, we're going to use government power to make you call a man a woman under the threat of criminal punishment or fines, right? And you see very quickly the absurdity of it and the impossibility of it. And the question becomes very quickly, not is this going to be successful, because I do think in the long run, the inherent unnatural nature of this, of these agendas, makes them fail, but it's how much damage they do along the way, right? Especially with our children and the education and the indoctrination around these for speech, the censorship, right? I mean, what's the thing recently in California I was talking to some about, where if you actually complain about a male being in a female space, you have to sign off that you have the mental problem, right? It's just very corrupt and insidious, and we need to constantly be pushing back against that and shining the light of truth, which we can only do if we have our rights to free speech fully protected.
And I was having this conversation the other day, and I was trying to put, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, just how nasty this rhetoric would be right now. I mean, I think it would be off the rails, because, you know, I mean, healthcare is one thing, health issues are one thing, but when you start talking about issues like this, it goes to a whole different level, and the word I'm looking for escapes me, but it's so far out there. Who knows where it ends up in the end?
Yeah, I mean, I think we see some of where it ends up. It ends up where you can't even quote from the Bible, right? Because the Bible is deemed to be exclusive, and so in the name of inclusivity, right, to protect the interests of the language they'll use as historically marginalized groups, right, that's the only thing we're focused on. And so we have to shut up anybody who identifies with traditional Christianity or even wants to just read passages from the Bible. We're going to completely censor that and block you and gray out your page on social media, because that would be harming our agenda of inclusivity. And of course, the Orwellian nature of that is apparent, right? In the name of inclusivity, we're going to exclude all these traditional statements and beliefs, and you know, probably the greatest book written, we're just not going to let you even quote from it because it's going to offend someone.
Yeah. Now, with the Supreme Court failing and really on a procedural matter in the Murthy case about standing, how mucky does this stay? For now, I mean, because in the defense of this, a lot of Democrats are saying, well, the Supreme Court, you know, refused to take this on. Well, no, that's not exactly right. They got out of it on a procedural matter.
Right. I mean, I think the odds that the Supreme Court is going to come out on the right side of these issues in terms of protecting children and acknowledging the truth, the truth of biological sex, and the fact that a man can't become a woman simply by saying magic words, and that children aren't born in the wrong body. I think all of that, to some extent, the Supreme Court is going to eventually come out on the right side of. And they're doing the right thing on some level by sticking to the procedural rules and coming down on the correct side in terms of standing. And you're right that those results end up getting abused by the headlines to make it seem like there's more support than there is. I do eventually expect them to come out on the right side on those issues. The real question is what they're going to do with the underlying case where the court ruled that discrimination on the basis of transgender status equals sex discrimination, right? Are they going to reverse that case? Are they going to try to strike some sort of balance, which is going to be really difficult? So there's still going to be a lot that needs to get sorted out, and it's difficult to read those tea leaves. But I think certainly the nation as a whole, I mean, I think ultimately this is one of those 80-20 issues, and ultimately the nation as a whole is strongly against the far radicalism that is the ultimate agenda of transgenderism. And so one way or another, whether that be legislatively, whether that be the court, I mean, heck, I think even you could probably get a constitutional amendment through, even as divided as we are, if the issue is framed narrowly enough. So eventually we're going to get this straightened out. It's just a matter of how long we have to wait and how much damage is done along the way.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll definitely have you back on as this thing kind of progresses, because I think there's going to be the second inning to this Jimmy Kimmel ball game, because it seems as though there are folks that really want this to perpetuate itself and to keep it going, right?
Yes. Always a place for the agitators to keep pushing. So, and you know, I think we have to just to welcome that, because eventually the truth does shine through when we have these debates.
Yep, for sure. Thank you so much for joining us, Stefan Padfield, Executive Director of the Free Enterprise Project. Have a great week.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, welcome back, and thank you for joining us.
For sure, Newell. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, last week we were talking, everyone, about the Saints being the line 16.5 points down. They said the largest since 1975, largest spread since 1975. I don't know if that's what motivated the Saints, but I thought they played much better football, competitive football yesterday, physical football yesterday. They come out on the losing end again. Couple of breaks, and things could be very different.
Yeah, you know, the line is there's no moral victories in the NFL, but I don't know. I disagree with that. When you're in a season like the Saints are in, and you have a lot that you need to prove to yourself, and you have a lot of players that are trying to prove that, you know, they should have a job in the NFL, there are such things as moral victories, just in the sense that you can't play like you did in Seattle. And I don't think the line was really, you know, I don't think that everyone's saying the Bills are a really great team and you're going to have a really tough time going out there and winning. I don't think that was the motivation, more so like you don't want to put tape out like you did in Seattle. Like, you need, as a coaching staff, as a team, to show up and play better, to play like you have a chance, right? And yeah, and that's what they did, you know, like, because if you put back-to-back games out like you had in week three, suddenly there's alarm bells going off and you're asking questions about the coaching, you're asking questions about whether you bench the quarterback, whether you need to bench starters, whether you need to trade people. And what they did with this game was avoid a lot of that. That doesn't mean you won. That doesn't mean an 0-4 start feels any better. But it does mean that you can come home and at least continue to say, hey, we're building towards something, because that's what this season is about. And, you know, you may have gone in with some pie in the sky ideas of, oh, they're gonna play a lot better than everyone expected them to. The reality is you're in a take your medicine type season. You're hopeful that you can find a way to pick up some wins here and turn things around and keep the playoffs in the picture as long as possible. But what you at least did with that performance is prove to people that, hey, you can come home and potentially beat the Giants this week, right? Like, that's where I'm at with it.
No, absolutely. And what I loved about it is, you know, we picked up an interception, really nice play. I think it was a rookie who actually made that play, obviously. And, you know, I mean, it was just – and you see things like that, it and it was a great play on that ball too. He covered a lot of territory, got over there. He read the quarterback. He loved seeing that, and it led to good things. We couldn't string a whole lot of things together, but I mean it was just, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but it was just one of those feelings. I just felt so much better about the team. They fought back. When they went down, they fought back, right? And they came right back and scored. I thought Rattler had a good game, quite frankly. Couple of passes that he missed. If it had been the ball 6 inches higher, we might have scored a touchdown or two, and things would have been different.
Yeah, so Jonas Sanker, I thought Jonas had a great game, and he's one of the guys that you come out of that game looking at and be like, all right, maybe we have something here. You know, it's playoff baseball is starting soon, and I think, one of the things about a great rangy safety is the same thing that's important with a center fielder in baseball is, the plays in baseball in the outfield are often made on that first step. If you have a quick first step, you can get to a ball and make it look routine that other guys just won't get to because you don't waste that motion. And what Sanker did really well on that play is he just read it immediately. He broke on it early, and he's able to get over there. And that can be the difference between a big play up the sideline and in a moment where you could seize momentum, or a big takeaway. That was Josh Allen's first interception of the season. He's not a guy that throws the ball to the other team. So that was a big moment there. But, what followed was probably the story of that game. And, you did a lot of the things you needed to do to give yourself a chance to win, right? Like, you got a turnover. You ran the ball. You avoided penalties. You had 4 penalties all day. 3 of them came on special teams. The only penalty was an intentional grounding on Spencer Rattler against the offense. Defense didn't have a single penalty all day. And in an environment like that, that's a huge improvement. You've had 2 games with double-digit penalties. In this game, the Bills were the team that had the double-digit penalties, and they were the least penalized team in the NFL going into that game. Spencer's day, it's tough to gauge. And Spencer, what I'll say about Spencer is he's a guy that is willing to do whatever it takes to win a game. He's going to put his body on the line. He cares so much about winning a game, and you can see that, and it's what makes it easier to root for him. The accuracy issues have become problematic, and there's just 2 or 3 throws in every game where it's like, you got to have that throw, right? And the throw to Cooks at the end, not at the end, but, with a chance to take a lead. Like, the Saints were in that game with a chance to take a lead midway through the fourth quarter. All they needed, they were down in the red zone. All they needed to do was connect on what was a pretty wide-open throw, and it looked a lot like the throw he made to Chris Olave against the 49ers, where it's like, you got to throw it early, but you got to be able to read that break. And I don't know, I think he was trying to protect him a little bit by leaving the ball behind him, but you can't leave it behind him and low. And Cooks almost, I think he did rescue it personally. I thought that was a pretty bold overturn based on the angles I saw, because if it was called a touchdown on the field, I didn't see it touch the ground. It looked like it might have, but every officiating crew has different definitions of indisputable, it seems. Either way, it's like those are the throws. It's like those are the winning moments that you need the quarterback to provide. And that's often the difference between winning and losing games. And so it's a little frustrating, and it's tough to gauge, because I love Spencer. I love the way he plays. I love his mentality. I love the way he, is able to take the ball and run it. But I don't love that you haven't had an explosive play in 2 weeks. I don't love that you miss these opportunities in critical moments. And so that's what makes it tough. And you're looking at it and saying, well, we got Tyler Shuck sitting over here. We're 0-4. At some point, you have to start having that conversation. I don't know if it's this week. I don't think you make a change coming off that game because you knew what that game was going to be. But I think week 5 is a really big week for Spencer, in terms of just showing that he can come in a matchup that, dare I say the word winnable matchup against the Giants. He's got to go out there and look like a quarterback who can lead you to a win, because at a certain point, not being the reason you lose isn't enough to keep that job. Right. Like, I think it has been so far, but I do think that changes. And I don't want it to sound like I'm down on Spencer. I really do like what Spencer has done. He just needs to elevate a few more notches to get to the point of being a winning quarterback in the NFL. And to this point, I just don't know if he's done it.
Interestingly, and we hadn't seen this in a long time, more rushing yards than passing yards.
Yeah.
189 yards. Kamara had a game, 15 attempts, 70 yards. Miller, 11 carries, 65 yards. Miller's average 5.9 and Kamara's 4.7. As a team, average carry was greater than the Bills, which no one expected that. I know I didn't.
Well, you know, I will take a little bit of credit here. Like, I went in there saying, you got to run the ball. This is one of the worst run defenses in the NFL statistically, and that proved to be true. You know, I wasn't sure if maybe that was a statistical anomaly, but based on playing the Ravens, you know, probably the best rushing team in the NFL. But they went into that game allowing a league-high 156 rushing yards per game. They went into that game having allowed a league-high 18 rushes of 10-plus yards, 2 yards before contact, which was the 31st in the NFL, and then like 4.25 after contact, which is 31st in the NFL. So the Saints' game plan going into that game was, we are going to run the ball. We're going to find a way to run the ball, and they did that. You do need to give Spencer Rattler credit there too, because he had 6 carries for 49 yards, and they were, yep, you know, a lot of them were scrambles, not a ton of designed runs, but they were important runs when they happened. But no, I think that's when you come out of this game, you know, that's a team you have to run the ball against, and but there's a difference between going in with a plan and actually executing that plan. And, you know, between the run blocking, I think it was better with Trevor Penning in there. You obviously had their change from Cesar Ruiz to Torrey Sellers Simpkins at late in the first half with Cesar going out with an injury. But no, I think when, you know, I talked to Alvin Kamara after the game, and it's like, yeah, that's something you can build on. Like, especially for Kendre Miller, who, you know, has had some flash moments. You know, he's been healthy for a month of a season for probably the first time in his career. I'm not sure if he's ever gotten through 4 games of full usage before in his career. And, you know, that touchdown run was really impressive. You know, he broke a couple tackles. He's just a guy that can create outside of the structure of the offense. And the Saints don't have a ton of guys on the offense that can do that. So, no, I mean, if you can continue to run the ball effectively, that makes life a lot easier. And I do think that wins will follow. If you can be a good rushing team and you can support your quarterback that way, you're going to win games. You're going to have easier matchups. And no, you're spot on. That was a very, very positive thing that the Saints got in this game.
Yeah, and I only say that because of the iffiness of the front line. You know, we've not really had the same people out on the field. But what I really loved is how many times Buffalo safeties had to make tackles on these rushers. So they weren't being taken down, you know, at the line of scrimmage. There were some great lanes and seams that were established. And, you know, when you see Kamara go through a hole and he starts to take off, it's like, at any given moment, he could run himself free for a touchdown. And obviously, Miller's the same style runner.
Yeah, and I appreciate that it's become a legitimate tandem. Like, that's when Alvin Kamara was at his best. It was not workhorse Alvin Kamara. It was, hey, we've got Alvin Kamara, and we're pairing him with a complementary type runner. Even with Latavius Murray, you had a legitimate secondary guy. But the peak was Mark Ingram early in Alvin's career, where you had both guys, you know, as a 1,000-yard rusher early in their career, or at least close to 1,000 yards. I obviously, Alvin has never gone over 1,000 yards. But and that's what this is looking like now, where you have Alvin getting 15 carries for 70 yards, Kendre getting 11 carries for 65 yards. Like, that's at this point in Alvin's career, you do him a lot of good by not asking him to bang his head against a brick wall 20 times a game. Because that allows him to take advantage of the situations you put him in. And it also allows you to get a little more creative and get him touches in non-traditional ways. I really would love to see them get a little more creative with their running back screen game, because that's something that we just haven't seen the Saints utilize very much in the last several years, really. But that's what, you know, when early in Alvin's career, that was a huge part of the attack with Drew Brees, and he was so good at running the screen game. But no, I think just that duo, if you can continue to kind of build that duo up, and especially with Kendre gaining confidence and momentum there, no, I think that's a good thing for this team.
Jeff, I'm trying to recall how they sacked the quarterback a couple of times as well, right?
The Josh Saints Allen. Did, or which yeah. side? What are you talking about?
The Saints okay. Sacked Josh Allen a couple of times, didn't they?
Yeah, the Saints got 3 sacks in the game. 2 of them came within the span of 3 plays. And, you know, it was an interesting game because the Saints played really well when the Bills were backed up, right? Like, if you look at how the Saints defense performed in that game, they took advantage of advantageous situations, right? The interception came with the Bills operating deep in their territory. You know, the interception that should have happened was deep in Bills territory as well, with Chris Rumpf coming off, and I think he hit Josh Allen's arm, and the ball was right at Pete Werner, and he just couldn't come up with it. But yeah, and then Cam Jordan, Carl Granderson each got sacks down by the goal line, and that's a positive thing when you can. It's difficult to play defense when they're starting their drives near midfield. Like, that's going to result in points. You have to be able to take advantage when your special teams unit is able to pin them at the 3 yard line. That's where you got to be able to tee off. And the Saints did. You know, they didn't play the run particularly well once things got toward midfield, whether it was Josh Allen or James Cook. But that was good to see some pressure, and hopefully Chase Young can get into the action here soon and add a bit of teeth to that group, because it has been tough sledding when you're not able to generate pressure consistently and a guy like Josh Allen can just kind of feast back there. But no, there were some big, nice moments from that pass rush in that game for sure.
No, absolutely. I enjoyed the game. I love when they're competitive. I mean, it's, you know, I think the public, the fan base will be a lot more, a lot easier on them if they stay competitive in these games. I agree with you. If you string together three games like the Seattle game, it'll get pretty butt ugly quick, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And you know, if they can play with that type of efficiency and effort and avoid penalties against teams like the Giants and Patriots, we'll be having different conversations. So yeah, Hopefully they can.
For sure. Look forward to this weekend. Thank you so much for joining us. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Have a great week.
You too, Noel. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly,
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. Let's go to the talk lines. We have Sean. Sean, you're up. What say you?
Hey, how you doing, Noel? I'll be real
doing
quick.
Doing great.
Brother, thanks for taking my call. Man, I think you're giving Spencer Rattler an unfair assessment, man. It's the offensive line, man. If you can't run block, if you can't pass block, it's no way that Rattler is going to get the time to move the ball down the field. He's doing what he can do. He's taking the shots that he can take. He's completing the passes. He's running when he has to run. He's doing what he needs to do. It's the offensive line. Alvin can't run. Kendre Miller can't run. They're not opening the holes. So it's a very bad assessment on Spencer Rattler. I think the young man is doing a good job, and they're not giving him a fair shake without looking at the true root cause analysis. And that's all I had to say.
Hey, Sean, I don't know if you were totally listening, but I agree. I've been singing his praises for three games now. I don't think he's done. I think he's moving along. I think he's improving with each game. You know, when you have to run for your life a couple of times, if there's an interception here, there, you're down, you're trying to make something happen. I hadn't been critical of him at all. I mean, you know, interestingly, the Saints for the first time rushed for more yardage than passing yardage. They rushed for 189. Kamara had 15 attempts on 70 yards. Kendre Miller 11 on 65 yards. And Rattler was 18 of 27 for 126 yards. No interceptions. His longest pass being a 17-yard gain, which is the same as the longest run that Kamara had, and Kendre Miller had an 18-yard gain. They had a lot of things fall into place you know, yesterday, and it was against a quality team for sure. And the team before that, obviously the Seattle Seahawks, and a quality team. They didn't do as well, but they didn't lose the game because of him. And, you know, so there's a realistic amount that you can look for and ask for in a young player like that. And what complicates it, and your observations are dead on, what complicates it is the folks surrounding him. And when you don't have a healthy front line and you don't have the same players, you don't have a lot of stability there with the same players, it's hard to get into a rhythm. So I think he's done well, and I meant it when I said as long as the Saints stay competitive, they'll hold on to this fan base, because I think everybody realized this is a rebuild year. It's just about going out there and not having 12, 13, 14 penalties and, you know, and making silly mistakes over and over again and getting destroyed. But you stay in the game. They could have won a game yesterday. If they'd have got a break here or a break there, one pass being 6 inches higher off the ground than not, the play, you know, the ball's caught, you would assume, and it's a whole different outcome possibly. You never know. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.